You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sassman Securities in Johannesburg. We have to start with tariffs, David. We have to start with tariffs because here's a man, and I'm going to pontificate for a little bit, if that's okay. Here's a man that was elected because he said simple things, like he said, we're going to make America great again. He asked the question at all of his rallies. He said, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And everyone says, no. And said, I'm going to bring prices down. I'm going to be with you, the people. Energy prices will come down 50% in the first 6 months. I'm going to end the war in 24 hours after my inauguration, or even before, he says. And now, here we are, and I'm going to be market friendly as well. Well, the market doesn't like his tariffs. Inflation is going to go up. The war's not going to end. And so it goes on. How does he get away with it?
I'm not sure how it gets away. I think people are stunned. And I don't think they've been able to coordinate any kind of resistance. In other words, they haven't been able to form an army, because I think everybody's voted for him. They put him into power, and now they're saying, what did we do? You know, and they justify it by saying he's better than the other, you know, whatever the other choice would have been.
In other words, it's that horrible phrase that the financial services industry uses, the cleanest dirty shirt.
Yes, I think that was him. And they genuinely believed in him, in that he would do good for America. What you're finding now is a man who's, number one, surrounded by people that, I don't want to say you can't trust, but who've had no experience, you know, who haven't been in government. Lindsay, you know, having been in business for a long time and having studied companies and just looking at, you know, managing other people's and therefore looking at risk, you know, you understand that the person who runs the waterworks in a municipality, you know, he doesn't need a CA, or he just needs to have a knowledge of how the whole thing works. It takes years of experience. You know, you can't just suddenly get a student out of university and put them there, or go get a businessman who's been running a pizza parlor and put them there. Yeah, I know I'm exaggerating and being silly, but what I'm trying to say is you need experienced people to run run the forces, or the, you know, that grow an economy, or allow economy to function. I'm not being articulate yet, but what I'm trying to say is that and unfortunately he's putting people in positions there that have never been run a government. You know, they've run businesses. It's completely different.
Well, the thing is, it's not just that, David, and this comes to my point, which I want to make, which I'd love your opinion on. Apart from the fact that people like Pete Hegseth, and it hasn't got a clue, Tulsi Bard, whatever her name is, they are people that are fiercely loyal to Trump. And he will say, these are the points I want from the person who's going to be in my cabinet and be in positions of responsibility in my administration. Number one, fierce and unswerving loyalty to me. Yes. And then the other things that come along are just incidental, really. Oh, and he's quite good at his job as well. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's exactly what he's done, and that's the danger. And why is it a danger? Just use South Africa. What did South Africa do? Just think back on empowerment. When the government came in 1994, what did they do? They took all the civil servants who'd been there for years in various departments, in various municipalities, and replaced them by loyalists.
Yes.
Put people into Eskom, put people into Transnet, put people all over. These are people who never had any experience, you know, who never knew how to run these divisions, SAA and so on. Instead of getting people with who knew the inside and outside of these ins and outs of these divisions, he just put loyalists in. And what happens? You can see the impact with South Africa. And in a way, this is the same thing that's happening now in the US. You know, and this fears, because suddenly any director general, I don't know what they call them in the US, you know, starts to question. All of a sudden, whoever the cabinet minister is goes straight back to Trump, and there's all chaos. They put on suspension or they're kicked out.
Yes.
So can you imagine in the FBI or in the CIA or in the military, you know, in places like that where you get a complete novice, an unknown, coming in and giving you orders. So I think that's the fear. You know, that's a big fear. And that could include the economic departments as well. Mm. Anyway,
this is what he's done. And what he's essentially done is he has been a politician, but a politician who's turbocharged on lies, because he is not doing what he said he was going to do. And in fact, he's doing quite the opposite. Yeah. And then we get the South Africa story. Now, he wants to wield his axe. I mean, you see, he says, this is an article that's come from Reuters. It says, South Africa defended itself on Monday against attacks on its land confiscation policy by Donald Trump and his South African-born billionaire backer Elon Musk after the US president said he would cut off funding to the country over the issue. Trump said on Sunday, without citing evidence, that South Africa is confiscating land and certain classes of people were being treated very badly. We know what he's saying. He's being racist. We know that.
Yeah, I know. He made a statement without any kind of backdrop. I mean, he never had any evidence or any information. He hasn't looked at the act. The act, in a way, is bad, you know, because it just opens the way for the government to do whatever they want to do. But they can defend it. I'm neither here nor there. What I'm saying is Trump didn't look and hasn't gone through the act in great detail. He's just going back to the old Malema days of, we're just going to take farmland and, you know, we're just going to help ourselves to whatever we want. So he's being influenced by that thought. But listen, it is scary. And there are a lot of things that the government does that are scary. Yeah. But I think his attack is more on what South Africa stands for, you know, who our friends are, who we've backed and so on. And I think he looks for an excuse to have a confrontation.
He doesn't like the Iran, the allegiance with Iran. And I don't think he likes the support of Palestine. And then you've got Musk. And Musk says on X, replying to Ramaphosa, incidentally, he says, why do you have openly racist ownership laws? He said in a post on X, responding to Ramaphosa, who had posted the presidency statement. He was apparently suggesting white people were the victims of the racism he alleged. Now, anyway, it goes on from there. It hit the markets briefly. They've stabilized a bit now, but they're still down. But he just wants to pull aid. And you know what he said about Africa? Not just not so much South Africa, but Africa and certain African countries. He called them S-hole countries. Yeah. And he just wants nothing to do with the continent. Nah. That's up to him, of course. But don't be so obvious about it, for goodness sake.
No, I know. I think what happens, it is a wake-up call for Africa. You know what I mean? What I'm saying is that like Asia, like other countries, like Europe, he's saying these things in order for effect. To say, hold on a sec, it's time for you to wake up, get your act together. You can't keep coming with a begging bowl and, you know, asking for aid. Start helping yourself. When you help yourself, we'll help you. And I think that's the, you know, that's the kind of line that he's taking. So his whole issue has been, we've been tired of being generous for years to other nations, and I'm not defending him. I'm merely stating what he stands for. And
I think you're giving him too much credit. Actually, I don't think he thinks that deeply. He just wants to say, I don't want this money flowing out of America anymore. And let's have a look. Who do we give money to? Oh, look, there's South Africa. I wonder where that is. He doesn't even know where it is. Remember that time when he was talking to somebody about Namibia, and he was reading it, and he couldn't read properly the press release, and he called it Nambia. I'll never forget that.
Nambia.
Instead of Namibia, he said Nambia. This is Trump, of course. And I thought, this is what you think of Africa. You don't do your work. You think that there's a place called the Congo. There used to be, but there's not anymore. There's two. The Democratic Republic of Congo and the Republic of the Congo. It's two countries. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Anyway, David, it's an interesting situation.
The problem is that don't open your mouth.
Yeah.
Don't open your mouth if you don't know what you're talking about. We understand that no person can be in a situation where he knows everything, you know, but rather that you need to be briefed and you need to know where you're going so that you actually understand the situation and who you're going to talk to. He was obviously at the bottom of the aeroplane or plane that he was alighting or going on. I don't know where he was. You know, he was asked a question on Africa or South Africa, and he came out with this absolute nonsensical statement. I'm not saying that we mustn't worry about it, but you could see he didn't even know what he was talking about. You know, they do bad things. Well, what bad things? Yes, we do
terrible
do bad
things. He actually called it terrible things. Yeah,
we do bad things, but what do we do? You know, in other words, there's no evidence behind it. He just says they're bad people. Okay. You know, that doesn't make sense.
It's very funny, actually. David, anyway, the markets have come down today because of it. Yeah, the S&P was down over 2% at one stage. The S&P futures are now down around about 1 2/3%. Is this one of those sort of deep seek moments where the market says, oh, my goodness, look what's happened, tariffs, and the market's come down. So is it a buying opportunity? Do you think?
I think so.
You think so?
I don't. You know why? I think that when you go through the tariffs, I know there's been a lot of knee-jerk reactions and a lot of commentary from every institution about what it means. But in the end, they've kept China at 10%, which is neither here nor there, and I don't think that's going to be damaged. I don't think Canada and Mexico make much difference. I know for Canada and Mexico, it makes a difference, but I'm not sure for the United States.
Well, they're two of their biggest trading partners, so it's going to have some effects. I mean, from tomorrow, for example, I would imagine there are certain unscrupulous retailers that will say, okay, the avocado that cost you a dollar is now going to cost you $1.25 because of the 25% tariff increase. Some people will do that, and the man and woman in the street will say, wait a second, I'm either not going to buy it or I'm going to stump up, and therefore inflation goes up.
Yeah. But in terms of the broader U.S. economy, what does that mean? You know, that's what I'm trying to say. You know, it's a massive economy. It's very much an internal economy. In other words, it creates its own markets. I don't think a lot of goods relative to GDP actually leave America. And to an extent, whatever comes in, I think they will keep tariffs low on essential items. And I think even the oil that comes through from Canada is not going to attract 25%.
No, it's attracting 10%. They've put 10% on that because this is
there'll be concessions. Mm. Yeah. So I think when we go through it, and I'm not in a position because I don't know the full facts, I think you'll find that it's more noise than anything else. And I think it's more to rattle people and to make them also become a little more efficient, look inwards and not just dismiss it. They can't dismiss it because they've now got to go back to their own economies and say, okay, what do we do with South Africa? In fact, I don't know what South Africa does with the U.S. I know we're big trading partners and we send them a lot of goods, but I don't think it's a mammoth, it's going to have any major effect on either of us. If he stops at Goa or if he, on individual industries, yes. You know, I'm saying this broadly, but yes, there's a poor chap who might be making something that he sends to America, you know, which is going to chop his market, and that's unfair on him. But I think from a broad perspective, I don't think these are major issues. And I believe in time we'll just carry on as we did during his first term where, we got through – whatever.
Well, it's interesting you say that because that's one point of view. I saw a chap on an American television network who said the market hasn't yet factored in what this means. And when the EU tariffs come in, which they will, and Trump was very insistent upon that when questioned by the BBC last night as he was going off on Marine One, his helicopter, he said EU definitely, maybe the UK, I don't know, we can work that out with Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, and he said he gets on very well with him. Rubbish, he doesn't get on very well with anybody. But and the bloke's made the point, he said, this is just the start, you don't understand. The market is saying this will go away, and if it doesn't go away, then the market really has further to fall. So you're on opposing sides. I hope you're right, David. I really hope you're right.
I'm just looking here, you know, when you listen to Goldman, when you listen to all these, they're much more bearish than I am, you know. And it's probably smaller businesses that are going to be hurt rather than bigger business. And it could hurt the U.S. GDP. We don't know. You know, that's what I'm saying. That's why there's a great amount of uncertainty at the moment. And that's causing the sell-off. But I think as time goes by, more will be known. And I have no doubt that there'll be revisions, negotiations, you know, deliberations, whatever. Mm. Because America can't put himself into a position where the market starts to fall, where the U.S. goes into a recession, where rates start to go up. He can't do that for the very simple reason that you said as we started this talk about where he was, you know, before. If people start feeling poorer under Trump, you know, then there's going to be the 2 years' time, there's another election. Yeah,
Turn on him, you know. I mean, the thing about inflation and rising interest rates, David, particularly inflation and tariffs, he said as well, he had the temerity to say the following. He said, "Will be a little pain to start with, but the people are prepared to take that pain in the short term." I said, "What are you talking about? It's the poorest people, the people that voted for you. Yeah. Your big base is lower middle class base on, you know, not earning $200,000 a year." And he said, they'll pay. It doesn't matter. They understand. No.
They won't pay.
They won't pay. They won't exactly. Pay.
They're the ones who kicked out Biden, and that's where Biden was wrong. He didn't understand that the impact that inflation was having on the poorer classes. So if this continues, believe me, you know, they will get back at Trump, and the opposition will give something for the opposition to build on.
If there is an opposition, of course.
If there is, at the moment, they're in total disarray.
Nothing.
And that's why you asked me, how do they allow it to happen? Because there has been no coordinated effort to address these issues. Yeah. So, it's
Kamala
only 2 weeks.
Disappears.
What are we, 2 weeks?
Yeah, who's in charge of the Democrats? 2 weeks. Nobody, I don't know. Who's the leader?
No, I don't know. They've
got to find somebody in the next 2 years.
They're having a meeting, I think, to get a leader or someone, but I don't know who it's going to be.
Anyway, David, I'll tell you one thing, is that I would vote for you when it comes to the tariff argument, because congratulations, it's your 53rd anniversary of being in the financial markets or on the JSE today. And I can remember your 50th anniversary, and I remember sending out a tweet, as it was then, and saying this, and isn't he? I was very sycophantic. I was very toady towards you. I said, he's not only a great bloke and loves football, but he's a fantastic sketch artist. And I said all these things, and I got more retweets and likes and everything than I've ever had for any tweet I've ever sent out. And so you're people are very fond of you. I can't believe that was 3 years ago. Where did that 3 years go? I mean,
the last 3 years.
Yes. But it's congratulations, and you talked about in your message today on social media. You said the missing years. I don't want to grill you on that, but it was obviously a time that sort of still sits with you.
Those 3 years. I've been at Sasfin for 50 years of my life, but there was a period when we were owned by the French. And the French split us up into two firms. One was a retail firm and one was the institutional firm. And I was with the institutional firm. And then the French being who they are, you know, like Napoleon, you know, fled from Moscow with a tail between the legs. When, first of all, we had the internet bubble in 2000, and then we had the 9/11. Mm. And I think after that, they decided to pull out of all emerging markets. So I was at a crossroads, you know, I'd been literally, and the strangest thing happened on February the 8th, I remember it, 2002. And that was my 30th year in succession, you know, at Sasfin, or which was started Max Pollock, became Frankel Pollock, became SocGen, and so on.
Yes.
And this wasn't Sasfin, this at that stage it was SocGen. And we had a party for me at the Westcliff. And I had a lot of friends there. I remember Wayne was there, la, la, la. And they gave me Mont Blanc cufflinks and a Mont Blanc clock and a Mont Blanc pen and everything. Very nice.
They got a discount.
And then the next day they got hold of me and said, "We're closing you down."
Oh, nice.
So they waited till after the party, you know, and then And it took a few months to close down. And, the markets were in a turmoil. And that's, I don't know if you remember 2002, 2003, very, very
2000 when the NASDAQ crashed and never recovered, not for many, many years.
Yeah, but, it took a long time.
Yes.
So I actually went back to what was then SASFIN. And I said, okay, you know, I'm at a loose end. I haven't got a job because we've been closed down. And they never had anything. So I had like 2.5 years of very difficult times. I first went to CorpCap, and the strangest thing is I put something together. I had a whole business plan, and this is funny. So Lindsay, I was with Alec Hogg. I was doing radio, and David Gleason was still alive, very, very active, and he was a guest, and he came into the studio. And as he was walking out, he says, I'm going to have a big story next week. So what was the big story? That Nick Frangus was leaving Corp Capital. I don't want to go into the detail, but just so I was due to join Corp Capital the next week. And Nick Frangus, who was one of the founders, was leaving because of a conflict that he had with management there, which became a whole case and was aired in the public and blah, blah. So that was the end of Corp Cap. It lasted, you know, before it broke up. So that was 9 months. And then I joined, I tried to go back to SASFIN again. They couldn't offer me anything. And the funniest thing, Lindsay, is I now go to Barnard Jacobs Millett. I knew Paul Barnard. I had sponsored him for a membership at the JSE. Good friend. Sid Reeby came to me, who was ex-Merrill Lynch. And he said to me, he says, David, we want you to go to BJM. We want you to help build up the Jewish clientele. You know, in other words, help them with their client. I thought, okay. Anyway, so the first day that I'm there, within the first week, I'm still doing radio with Bruce Whitfield. And you know how institutions can sometimes manipulate prices when it comes to a quarter end or a certain date,
yes,
you know.
Window dressers.
We're a bit of window dressing. So I pick up on the screen, I pick up NASPES, and I see it had rocketed in the closing stages of trade, just rocketed. So I'm talking to Bruce, and I say this. I said, obviously, there's a bit of window dressing going by. Next day, I get a call from the institutional desk down in Cape Town at BJM. They just blasted me. I've never heard such foul language in my life, and I've been on the market for a long time. Guess who was manipulating? It was BJM.
Yes, of course.
So they hated me. They absolutely detested me, that firm. So that was another lost year. And then I finally came back.
Did they give you the sack? Did they boot you out?
Well, they kind of manipulated me out or maneuvered me out.
Yeah.
Because,
you had the party with the cufflinks and the pen, and then next day you're sacked, more or less. Then you got Corp Capital, which went bust just as you were about to join them. And then BJM gave you the HEPO as well. Yeah, so you had a bad time.
I know, it was a bad couple of years. And then, so I came back to SASFIN in early 2005. I said to Alan Greens, I just want an office. But nothing. I just want an office, and I'm going to start building up clients. I had absolutely no clients, and I said, I just want to build up one by one by one, which was the start of my career there.
Very good.
But
now, look, I don't know, ask how many clients you've got or what your assets under management are, but it's quite a few, I imagine.
Yeah, no, I do well. I've got, built up and done our business, mainly because SASFIN left me alone. They never interfered with me and just allowed me to do what I do. But one day we'll have a bigger chat, because you always find, Lindsay, within your firm, it's one thing I've always found throughout my career on the market, is that your biggest competition is from within the firm itself, not outside the firm, from within. In other words, your ideas, you've always got to negotiate that. And throughout my career, it's always been something, you know, that whatever idea you had, it was harder to sell it inside than outside.
That's interesting. You're an autonomous profit center on your own. So you're your own man, and they do the admin and they take fees, obviously.
Yeah.
But okay, well, that's a good arrangement. I like that. Okay, David, just quickly, a couple of shares on the JSE today. ArcelorMittal down 7.5%. Pepcor with an update up 3.7%, something like that. Vodacom, 4.6% higher, and Harmony up 2.2%. Any of those that caught your eye?
Look, the markets, in fact, the market is actually doing better than I thought it would be. Mm. You know, those are two. Generally, it's there's a lot of weakness and a lot of concern over the statements that have come out from Mr. Trump. But, you know, there's nothing much on the down. It still seems to be a very edgy, touchy market, you know, and with the Rand kind of helping some of the miners. I know there is the famous mining indaba down in the Cape Town where every miner, I mean, that's the last place on earth that you would like a mining indaba, because I think they're as far away from a mine as you are. But it's a great place to have a seminar. And I think most people spend more time outside than inside, meaning, you know, the restaurants and everybody has a great time. Yes. But I think that does sometimes, some things do come out, particularly now at a time where there's a lot of consolidation being spoken about in the mining industry.
Okay, David, so let's finish, as we often do, on football. I thought Arsenal were superb last night, weren't they?
They were. You know what? I must say that I feared for Arsenal. I feared for Man City. I've got a wonderful team, and I thought, oh, no. I really thought that I would have bought a draw. You know, I said, oh, thank God they drew. But I was very disappointed in Man City. They just, the De Bruyne's, all of them, Kovacic, the missed passes, the poor defending. It's a broken team, Lindsay, hey?
Yeah, they're having a year off, that's for sure. And they're not going to qualify for the Champions League. The only way they'll get into the Champions League is if they win the Champions League, and they're not going to win the Champions League. They're simply not good enough. Pep, it's a chastening experience for him, I think.
I felt, you know what, I think he can't stay there, not because I don't think he's lost it, you know what I mean? I don't think he'll ever get back what he had, and he needs a break psychologically, emotionally. You know, he's gone through the troubles you told me about him and his wife.
Yes, and you can trace it back to early December, and there's two things that happened. He lost Rodri, who's the silkiest, smoothest, best player in the world. Yeah. And he was lost through a nasty injury. And then his wife and he split up. His wife has been back in Barcelona for a long time doing her fashion business. But then she formalized it and said, no, I can't do this anymore. And I think that hit Pep, because he's a family man, you know. He loves his family, from what I understand. So that is when he started to lose it, and the team could sense that. I mean, I think
he
committed that to the to his players.
It's very difficult. Mm. Now, I think you're dead right. I don't think I don't think you're wrong. You can't, you know, if you're emotionally upset, you can't kind of just brush it aside. Mm. And I think it did transmit through to his players, but I think a lot of them have had one season too much now. De Bruyne is looking. Time for him to go. Mm. Great player, but I don't think he'll ever get the same kind of energy and drive that he had last season and so on. So, I was so impressed with the youngsters, and that gave me a lot of joy, you know, that they could play with so much passion. And even if you looked at Spurs, you know, this Archie Gray, I mean, there's some wonderful little, young people coming through. Hey? Mm. Wonderful. So, I was upset for you.
I don't want to talk about Ipswich, please. I'm sorry, I'm blotting it out.
You know what?
No, I've already had psychological support after the dispute.
You know, I watched them. I thought they were going to crunch the opposition, and they end up losing.
Thank you very much for reminding me. Now I have to go back into therapy tomorrow.
David, listen, I've been through it for years. For years I've been in it.
Happy anniversary again, David. 53 years in the business, and there's not many people that can say that and still have the enthusiasm that you do. David Shapiro is still with Sasfin Securities, and that was Shapiro World. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.